It is more important to know what the Reformation retained than what it overthrew.
Dr. Larry Rast, talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Charles Porterfield Croft made that statement back in the 1800s, but it remains true for us today. The church's job is to confess faithfully, and simply to overthrow error does not establish truth. What we are about is confessing biblical truth. And what this conference promises to do is to help us recover that for an age that desperately needs to hear that truth.
You can meet and hear Dr. Larry Rast making the case for the conservative Reformation June 10th and 11th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky.
I've seen the reaction many times from Texas and from Dallas, Texas, born and raised there, and taking friends or girlfriends, eventually a fiance and a wife to Texas to visit the family. First, you're impressed by the size of the state. It is a very large state, larger than you expect it to be. And then you're impressed by the fact that Texas is kind of, it's a brand. It's the shape of the state is everywhere. And they're very proud of being Texas. One of the only places I know where the nightly news starts, not with the name of the town from which the news is originating, but news for Texas. It's really an experience. Now, there's a recent New York Times column titled, What Makes Texas, Texas?, that leaves something out, gets a lot of it right, but leaves something out. We're going to be talking about that column. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
All right, so just as a matter of credibility, you need to establish your Texas credentials for us in the audience.
Well, I don't even know where to start with that. I am a first-round draft pick of the Texas Baptist establishment. Let's just put it that way. My family is about as Texas as you can get. And, of course, as a graduate with 2 degrees from Baylor University, I can look right up here on my wall in my office in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and see the great seal of Baylor University that says, Pro Ecclesia, Pro Texana, for the church and for Texas. Which, of course, when people see that on a Baylor sweatshirt, they look at you kind of funny and go, Pro Texana? And you go, we got to understand, Baylor is so old. Baylor was chartered by the Republic of Texas. So that seal is literally for the church and for the state, for the country, because it was the Republic of Texas when Baylor was founded. So that's pretty deep Texas roots. A number of years ago, Baylor got into a kind of a controversy about how they picked their trustees, you know, in terms of kind of weakening their ties to the Southern Baptist Convention as a part of this whole, like, quarter to third of a century civil war that's been going on in Southern Baptist life. And people were saying, well, gosh, if they try to do that, that thing's going to go to court. You know, and I thought to myself, okay, what court are you going to try this one in? I mean, if we're essentially getting down to the founding documents of Baylor, I'm not sure that there's a Texas court around that can handle this. Texas is a unique situation. It's the only state, I've traveled quite a bit, I've never been in any other state of the union, where when you go to get your free breakfast in the morning at major hotel chains, most of them don't have waffle irons that are shaped like the state you're in. When you go to Nebraska, you don't get Nebraska-shaped waffles.
I explain it to people, non-Texans, this way, and that is, Texas is not just a state, it's a brand. It is a brand in and of itself. Do you think that's a good way of describing it?
Well, yeah, it's a frame of mind. And there are people who just can't conceive of leaving it. And now, on the website, on my online biography, I refer to myself as a prodigal Texan. because I basically fled the state in like 1978. And when I say that, I'm admitting that there's parts of me that are deeply Texan. But I've never understood the mythology of Texas, you know, that there's no place in the world better than Texas. And I like some things about Texas, and I love lots of people that are in Texas, and my family roots are there. But I've never understood the mythology of Texas. Can I share my all-time favorite Texas joke?
Please.
If there are people listening today who are fans of the rock band, the Talking Heads, you know, the leader of that band did an album, not an album, a movie a couple of years ago, decades ago, called True Stories. And at the beginning, and it's set in Texas. It's set on the Texas Gulf Coast, where I grew up, spent my most formative years in the extremely polluted, racist refinery town called Port Arthur, largely racist. Not everybody's racist, but lots are. Anyway, I digress. He's driving out across this flat land of Texas, and he explains the Texas frame of mind. And it goes like this, the creation story. You know, when God created the world, very few people realized that he had promised himself the seventh day off. And he worked really hard to get the whole world created in 6 days. But toward the end of the project, he basically just ran out of stuff. And he had used up a lot of his beautiful things, like mountains and, you know, forests and lakes and all that. And then he had very little stuff, and he had this massive slab of concrete left, this hot, you know, baked slab of concrete. And then being God, he came up with the perfect solution. And he said, okay, I'll just make millions of people who want to live on a large baked slab of concrete. And that's how we have Texas. And I mean, Texas has two seasons, burnt and mud. I know the state well, but it is a unique place, and there are people who cannot conceive of living anywhere else. One member of my family went off to do graduate work in a different part of America, and she went up pretty far to the north and never bought a winter coat. She lived through, you know, multiple winters in a pretty, you know, semi-northern climate. Why buy a coat? Because she knew she was going back to Texas.
So this New York Times column titled "What Makes Texas Texas?" As a Texan, how did you read it?
Well, first of all, I thought it was hysterically funny in some ways, in the sense that, you know, I'm sure this person who's been assigned to go to Texas, and he's, you know, his family is with him, and he lives in Houston. I was stunned the New York Times didn't have him based in Austin. Back when George W. Bush had the Western White House, you know, outside of Waco, and you know, I had people tell me that the folks from the New York Times who were covering Bush weren't staying at hotels in Waco. They were driving, you know, like an hour and 45 minutes from Austin to get to the Texas White House because they didn't want to stay in Waco. And that's, in effect, what they're in effect saying is they wanted to stay in Austin instead of in Texas. So, I, you know, to some degree, I applaud this guy for taking a shot at it. But the key statement, kind of the thesis statement of this thing, the what makes Texans the way they are, let me read this to you. I have covered stories in the South, the Midwest, and other parts of the country. People in those places identified with their political party, their job, their cause, their sexual orientation, their city, their race. Almost no one identified with their state the way Texans do. Who are these people, these Texans? Well, what made me want to write about this is there's one rather big part of a lot of people's lives in Texas that is not in that list, and what would that be?
Their religion.
Their religion. I mean, Texas, you know, the old saying, in parts of Texas, there's more Baptists than there are people. You know, if the dead get to vote in Chicago, in Texas, the dead go to church. I mean, they're still on a lot of church rolls. And that's a part of the mythology of Texas, how, you know, powerful religion is. And at the end of my post on this at Get Religion, I stressed that, yeah, you've got pickup truck Texans that have that never really darken the door of a church. And then you've got lots of Texans who say they go to church, but it really doesn't have much of a role in their lives. The old saying, Billy Graham once told me that if he had to preach a revival in New York or Atlanta, he'd choose New York. He said, because in Atlanta, everybody already thought they had God. You know, even if it had almost nothing to do with their life, their brain told them they were Christians, even if they weren't. Texas has a lot of that in it. But the simple fact of the matter is there's a third kind of Texan, and there's millions of really religious, intensely active religious believers in Texas. And there are other states that may be as religiously involved in many ways as Texas, but I don't know if there's too many that are much more influenced by religion as the state of Texas. And when Texans say, elsewhere in this New York Times piece, he says, Texans are telling me that their way of life is under attack. And they feel it's primarily under attack by the U.S. Supreme Court and, say, the popular culture and the political culture. You think when most Texans say their way of life is under attack, it doesn't have something to do with religion?
It has everything to do with it.
Well, I mean, no. I mean, I'm not sure guns, you know, and there are a lot of gun owners in Texas, and that's one of the things in my life that I disagree with a lot of people in Texans on. I'm a pretty strong advocate of gun control. I'm very opposed to the death penalty for the same reason as that I'm opposed to abortion. There's lots of things that differentiate me from a typical Texas mindset on a lot of things. But the simple fact of the matter is lots and lots of Texans, enough to intensely influence the educational, political, and cultural habitat that is that state. Religion is a part of all that. And you couldn't possibly cover the state of Texas and not notice that. Yet there is not a single reference to religion in this piece in the New York Times attempting to explain Texas to the rest of America.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a New York Times column titled What Makes Texas, Texas When We Come Back. The columnist does mention fear, anger, and sometimes paranoia that he says lurks between Texas politics. Is that his reference to religion? Maybe religion isn't missing from this New York Times column. We'll find out from Terry right after this.
God bless Texas.
The Divine Service is where Christians gather around word and sacrament. We join together to receive God's gifts in the liturgy. But do you know the meaning behind what we do? There's a book called Ceremony and Celebration that explains Lutheran liturgical worship. Find out more and read book excerpts online at emmanuelpress.us. E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L press.us. You'll find answers to your liturgical questions in Ceremony and Celebration, emmanuelpress.us.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If God knows everything and has a plan, what good is prayer?
Pastor Jonathan Fisk talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Answer that with the Lord's Prayer's teaching about what we pray for. When we study the prayer attentively, we find in its words a beautiful mirror of the desire that faith in the Lord Jesus gives us to see the Ten Commandments fulfilled not just in Jesus on the cross, but also then among us. So often today, Christian prayer puts all of its marbles on asking just for daily bread. But there is so much we lose when we have only such hopes for this life. So what we're going to do this June is come back and be humiliated in repentance before our Lord and ask Him, teach us to pray, and we know we will receive what we ask according to His Word.
You can meet and hear Jonathan Fisk making the case for the Lord's Prayer Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.
There's a place not too far away from here, out with the cows and the Lone Star Beer, with an evening club that is quite all right with me. Well, they call it Texas, it's a mighty fine place to be.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, talking about a New York Times column titled, What Makes Texas Texas, that kind of left out the religion part, or did it? Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, and author of the Weekly on Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, I'm wondering, the columnist does mention, I quote, fear, anger, and sometimes paranoia that lurks between Texas politics or beneath Texas politics. Could it be that that's how he's talking about religion in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, he's to the left of Obama, you know, with the famous statement that when he was running for president the first time around, when he was captured on tape saying, what was it? People were so scared they were clutching their God guns, the Bible. What was that exact phrase? It was something like that.
Cling to their God and their guns, I think it was.
The God, their guns. You know, there's definitely a strain of people on the left that view that religious, those concerns about religion and family issues as completely unfounded. And thus, he uses the word paranoia. Some people perhaps would say that in his list of things, differentiating certain regions, when he says their cause, maybe that's what he thinks faith is. So to some degree, this is like the syndrome that you and I have talked about journalists having a tendency to think that politics is the only thing that is real, and then religion isn't. Well, I got news. No politician runs for office in Texas thinking that, if they want to survive. And a couple of readers have said, well, what about Houston? This guy lives in Houston. Houston isn't all Bible Belt people. You know, obviously I know that. And he cited, you know, Houston has a gay mayor. And I wrote back in the comments section, I said, ask the mayor of Houston if she has discovered that churches play a large role in the city. And I'm referring, of course, to the early fights over the bathroom wars and to her attempt to require ministers in the city of Houston to turn in sermon manuscripts when they preach on subjects that her administration deems political. How did that go down in the state of Texas?
That even got Lutheran pastors writing.
Oh, you know, that was so outrageous. I mean, well, to some degree, she discovered that, yes, she was the mayor of Houston, but there were other forces, there were other powers that be, you know, in her community that weren't going to just roll over and play dead. And even in a very modern, very multicultural city like Houston, religion is one of them.
Terry, there are other states. You talk about you're there in Tennessee. There are other states,
yeah,
where religion is the dominant factor in people's lives, in a majority of people's lives.
It's the dominant factor in a lot of people's lives, so many of them of which that it is a major factor in the state's culture. That's how I would put it. I'm not claiming that religion, truly lived out, is even the most powerful thing in Texas. What I'm saying is that it's so much a part of the lives of so many Texans, and, yes, Tennesseans and a lot of other places, that you cannot look at the culture of that state and not see how important that is. It is a dominant force in the state's culture, not the. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So does this, let's just see if this could be writ larger, and that is, we're talking here about media coverage of Texas, but the same would apply to any other state where the same factor is a dominant thing, right?
Right. I mean, and Texas in that sense might be a highly exaggerated and mythological piece of the Bible Belt, but the Bible Belt remains the Bible Belt in some ways. And in the last couple of weeks, we've seen an almost go-to-the-mattresses siege of New York Times coverage of pitting the cities of the Bible Belt against the rest of the culture of the Bible Belt. And in some ways, those are valid stories. There is a real tension there, just as there's a tension between Austin and certain neighborhoods in Dallas and Houston and whatever versus the rest of the state of Texas. Those kinds of divisions exist elsewhere. Anybody that's lived in the state of Illinois knows that the city of Chicago is not exactly typical of the rest of Illinois. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Can I get a witness? I mean, these tensions exist, and they're valid stories there. But you can't just automatically assume that the city's point of view represents that whole culture, any more than it would be wrong to assume that the cities don't count at all. At some point, you're going to have to cover both sides of that story. It's a basic journalistic question. At some point, you're going to have to admit that how powerful the large, religious sectors of the state are, and, kind of get with the program and cover them.
Finally, Terry, with only about a minute here, at this point, how out of touch is the New York Times on the subject of religion in America?
Well, I ended my column by pointing out something that I've always considered highly symbolic. Now, lately, I have begun to spend quite a bit of time in New York City. One of the most amazing stories going on in New York right now is the kind of a rebirth of a lot of religious congregations of a wide variety of kinds. A lot of them are ethnic, Korean Presbyterians, Latino Pentecostals and stuff. You know that famous image from the New York cover from the 70s? The view from New York, the view from, I forget exactly the name of the painting, but it's looking west from New York City. And basically, here's New York, here's the Hudson, and then the rest of America is just like a desert, and way off in the distance you can see this thing that says, like, L.A. In other words, there's nothing else in the world that matters except New York. Well, folks, look at that image real careful. There are no churches in that image. When the New Yorker looked at New York, it didn't even see the steeples. And there are very few parts of New York City that you can get a good picture of a skyline or of a neighborhood or something and not see the churches. So to some degree, my question is, does the New York City understand basic life in large parts of the United States, including large parts of New York City? That's the bigger question.
Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to do it, partner.
Folks, if you love the expansive topics and the expert guests that you hear on a daily basis here on Issues Etc., be sure to attend the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Some of your favorite guests will be there teaching on biblical womanhood, the conservative reformation, law and gospel preaching, the Lord's Prayer, the means of grace, and the end times. You can find out more about this conference, and you can register by calling 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382, or visit issuesetc.org. There are 400 spots. We are very close to 400 already, so you need to register. It's the 4th Annual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th in Collinsville, Illinois, just about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we will get a review of the movie Captain America: Civil War from Pastor Ted Giese. We'll also continue our series responding to liberal proof texts with Dr. Jeff Gibbs. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you then. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.